Welcome, everybody, to Art of Advisory. This is your host, Hector Garcia, with Quick Bookkeeping, and joined by the other host, Kirk Bowman, from Art of Value. Hey, Kirk, how are you?
I'm good, Hector. How are you?
Good, man. I'm sorry we couldn't go live earlier today. Just had a bit of an emergency, so we're making up for it by going live later on in the afternoon. And of course, we're going to be posting this to our podcast like normal. So how's it been, man? How's your week been?
Pretty good. Getting a little busier. QB Connect's 2 weeks away. So, starting to get final order of slides in order, getting thoughts in order, practicing, going through the session, making sure, you know, I'm not running over, not running under, taking this out, putting that in. You know how it works. You do slides, you know, sometimes for these things, 3-6 months in advance, and then you get up to a couple weeks, and that's really when you hash it out, even if it's something you've done before, because at least for me, I'm always constantly learning. So even if I give the same session with the same title at two different conferences 2 weeks apart, I'm going to wind up, they're going to be unique, you know, and that's part of what I try to bring. I try to make sure I'm always growing and always bringing something new, even if somebody sat through it before. So that's what I'm focused on. I'm looking forward to it. How about you? I know you've had a crazy week.
Yeah, a lot of things going on. Had to take my wife to the urgent care today with strep throat. So my first time seeing someone getting a penicillin shot in their butt. It was a new experience for me. And apparently it hurts. I've never been through that experience before. So that's why I had to cancel the live thing this morning. So today's episode is going to be a little bit interesting. So this is our 36th episode, right? We've gone live in almost every one of them. We probably have pre-recorded two or three and posted them. We go live on Facebook. We also go and post it in our podcast. And the Art of Advisory was, I was trying to merge my first attempt to podcast, which was called the Advisor's Corner, which is really more about the transition into becoming an advisor, or kind of what an advisor thinks or what other advisors do for a living. I wanted to demystify some of the concepts around what a business advisor or consultant is. And I became friends with Kirk over the last couple of years, who really all he talks about is value pricing, because that is his master area of expertise. So we wanted to merge the two concepts together, right? A person that does accounting and advisory sort of at the same time, and Kirk, who has his own business, not related to accounting, but is great at value pricing and brings that into the table. So we try to avoid making this podcast about value pricing, because there already is a great podcast about value pricing, which is Kirk's. But we can't help it, because advisory or giving advice generally is a lot different than the traditional work, right? Because sometimes you can give one piece of advice that takes 10 seconds to think and come up with. That could be the greatest business shift for the person that you're giving advice to. So how do you price something like that? And sometimes you're giving advice over a long period of time, and it's just bad advice, and maybe they keep you because they like you, and then at some point you do give good advice, or you know, the stars align and your advice actually starts coming through. So it is even more difficult to price, especially for accountants that are used to the traditional model of I'm going to spend 3 hours and charge for 3 hours type of stuff. So I think it's only natural to hone down on the importance of pricing your services based on the outcome or the values that you create for your customers. So we're going to continue to be talking about value pricing. And I've done some value pricing webinars on my own. They're pretty small in scale, and I try to make it really practical, sort of spreadsheet based. But the biggest feedback I get is people want ongoing coaching, or they want something a little bit longer. So I asked Kirk to modify his current value pricing offering to adapt it to the sort of the small business accountant, bookkeeper, software advisor that's in the same boat as me. And we've actually, in the last episode, we kind of brainstormed about, you know, how would that look like? And I think at this point, Kirk has something together, and he has an official offering that I think is going to be perfect for a small business accountant and bookkeeper. So let's discuss that towards the end. And we want to just make today's episode themed around tracking costs, because I think that cost tracking is probably one of the biggest culprits of holding people back with value pricing. So Kirk, you want to add something to that before we start digging into cost tracking?
Well, so the mentoring, coaching, training program, because it's kind of all three that I've come up with, I'm calling VPS. That stands for Value Pricing Switch, because everybody has to decide, make a commitment at some point to adopt a new business model if they're going to move to value pricing. And it literally is a switch. Unfortunately, it's not a switch like turning on a light. It's not something that you just flip the switch and it happens. It's something that is a transition over time. The switch is the decision you make, but the execution of that decision, of that commitment, happens over a period of 12 to 24 months. And so I put together a program that is going to be running basically 4 weeks over November and December, right after QBC, QuickBooks Connect. And you can find out more about that by going to artofvalue.com/VPS. I said VPC, but VPS, Value Pricing Switch, VPS. And we'll talk more about it a little bit later, but that'll at least give people an opportunity to go check that out if they're curious. So costs. Yeah, I'll throw the first salvo on this. Costs are irrelevant. What do you think?
Well, cost, that's not easy, right? Here, costs are irrelevant.
I'll unpack that, but that you right. can sum it up that way. Costs are irrelevant. Just
yeah,
like,
yeah. No, that means, yeah, of course, you know, I think running a business is about innovating, marketing, capturing a client, creating loyalty, and managing your costs so you don't become insolvent or you run out of business. So I actually agree with you that doing the mindset shift of the process of value pricing in the switch component, you do have to put costs to the side, because they'll become so dominant in your thinking that it won't let you go through. Now, I'll qualify by saying costs are relevant, because if I have more costs than income, I can't run a business. But I think I agree with you that you should not allow costs to get in your way on the mindset shift of value pricing, especially when you're doing a switch. And I'll add a little bit more to that, so I'll let you unpack that. For folks just starting their business from zero, or folks creating a different division for their company, or coming up with a brand new service, for them to go to value pricing, it's easy, because there's no that burden of being accustomed to doing it a certain way, or that burden of the thought process that your current infrastructure has a cost structure, and switching with that cost structure is going to cost you to lose money. So I want to recognize that for people starting from scratch, it's a lot easier to think about this than people that already have something set up, a specific clientele, a specific team with salaries and all that stuff. So so yes, I agree with you. Costs for mindset shift should be put to the side. But of course, you know, we don't want to be naive and say, don't worry, you know, costs don't matter. But I'll let you unpack it, Kirk. So you throw it out there, you unpack it.
Well, here's why I say costs don't matter. And let's clarify. So, you know, I could talk about all business in general, but I don't want to do that. I want to narrow it down, and I want to talk about professional services. And particularly in this case, we're talking about accounting and bookkeeping. Although a lot of this conversation carries over to things such as law, development, design, those kind of things. But for the sake of this, we're going to focus really on accounting and bookkeeping. When you have what we call a practice, professional services firm, et cetera, it is impossible to attribute any specific dollar amount spent on something to a specific customer project. You can't do it. That's one reason why I say costs are irrelevant. Second, the notion that you have to know your costs before you set price is false. And that's been proven false not only in the professional services world, but it's been proven false in the manufacturing world. For example, Toyota, one of the best car companies in the world, the way they price is they first decide what is the consumer willing to buy and what are they willing to pay for it. Then they go to the engineers and say, you need to build this, and this is the price we're going to sell it at, and you need to make sure it's profitable. Kind of reminds me of that scene from Apollo 13, where the guys are trying to make it back from the, you know, flying around the moon. Their capsule's filling up with too much carbon dioxide. And the problem is the particular part of the spacecraft they're in the filter was designed for a round filter hole, but all they have is a square filter. And so literally there's a scene where they take all the engineers and they put them all in a room, and then they all get around this table and they said, look, the problem is the guys are running out of oxygen. We got to figure out or how to give them more oxygen by taking this. And they hold up this square cube and they say, put it into this round hole. And then they take a bag and they dump it out on the table and they say, using nothing but that. The idea was that they had to figure out how to solve the problem. And then they had to walk three guys who were cold, sick, and had not slept in 3 days through the procedure on how to save themselves. So that's kind of the idea. You know, you determine what the result is and set the price. Costs come later. All right. Go ahead.
Just wonder if I can add something to that. So
you got me wound up. So you got to jump in.
I know. I got to unwind you a little bit. So yeah. So if you're running an accounting, I'm just gonna run the example, right? I'm running an accounting practice. I have maybe two employees. I have 100 customers I'm dealing with. Some I work on demand, right? They tell me do this and I do it and I charge by the hour. Some have a monthly engagement where they pay me a retainer and then I charge, the hours that I use. And basically at the end of the month, I tell them, hey, you owe me a little bit, or there's some credit, towards your account. Some wait, for once a year. Some want me to go on site, whatever. I have a mixed practice in which I'm doing multiple things. And what you're alluding to is, telling someone that if they want to, work differently, right? They want to only work with clients that recognize the value of your services and are willing to pay for that and are okay with paying a flat fee, which most people will always be, by the way, unless there's an illusion that they're paying more for getting less. That's a different circumstance. But generally speaking, if they're getting the same or more, they're okay with getting a price up front. They may not like the price, but they're okay with getting a price up front, and people never get offended by a price being up front. But what I'm saying is you have an actual practice, a real practice. It's ongoing. And the situation comes in where let's assume you already decided to go to value pricing. So that's a very important thing. You already decided to go to value pricing. You're already in space. That's what Kirk is saying. You're already in space. I don't have a choice to get out of this situation. I'm already in value pricing. I'm already in space. So what they're asking, what Kirk is saying is to make a switch inside your head where you don't take the existing business model that you have and try to adapt it to then charge value pricing. Just buy into the fact that your customers want to pay a flat fee, that you are going to pay a flat fee. And then you no longer have to track costs in the way that you were taught in accounting school, with management costing and job costing and all this craziness that actually it's more of a fallacy than reality. So what Kirk is saying is, value pricing is we're already in trouble in space. Now what we have to do is we have to now accept the fact that all of our new customers are not going to pay all the new fees that we quoted. Some we underquoted, some we overquoted, whatever that means, right? And now we have to figure out how to run the operation under that price. What I think Kirk is saying is that you are committed to giving a better customer experience. You are committed to finally giving to your customer the product and service they actually wanted, which is a promised outcome, a promised result, and a fixed price. You have to give in to the concept that you are okay with that. And now you have to go back and re-engineer your business. You have to dismantle it and make it work. That's what Kirk is saying. The analogy is great, but for a lot of folks, they get stuck saying, well, how am I going to charge? How am I going to do that where I have these three salaries I have to pay? And the only way I know how to pay these three salaries is by charging the 40 hours a week to my customers. And that's what the problem with most small business owners that charge by the hour, whether it's accounting or anything else, is that the only way they justify keeping three people in the team is by having invoices equal to 40 hours per person, and that dollar amount is over the burden labor rate. And that's the only formula that most people know, and that's the cost component that people get so stuck on. So you have to almost dismantle the business model and then make it work. And by the way, making it work could be getting rid of an employee. Making it work could be renegotiate your salaries with your employees to match the way you charge your customers. And in reality, if you go back to your customers and charge flat fees, and you both agree to all the dollar amounts, and now the revenue to your firm is below the cost of your employees, then something is wrong with your entire business in the first place, right? You're providing too low value where customers want to pay too low of a price, or in this case, you build a too complex of an infrastructure to solve not so expensive pain points for your customers, which is why you're getting paid so little. So all these things go hand in hand. And Kirk, I just wanted to kind of like find a way of making it a bit more tangible for the folks that are just like in the day-to-day grind of just, you know, paying their bills and stuff like that.
Well, you said it fairly well. It is a different business model, and you can't take value pricing is a business model. And I've really been doing some thinking lately about where does value pricing fit into the discussion of strategy or tactics? Part of the problem is a lot of people think it's just a tactic. And then so that, you know, it's like, you know, hey, we're going to start using blue pens instead of red pens or something like that. No, it's above tactics. It's even above strategy. It is a business model. You are first deciding how you're going to run the business based on a worldview, based on a mindset. We call that a business model. From that, out of that business model, you determine what your strategies are, and based on the strategies, you implement tactics to achieve those strategies. Business model comes above strategies and tactics, and it's not something you can just superimpose over something else. Now, where people get tripped up is when you're making the switch, and that's what this 4-week training course that I'm teaching is going to address, is you have to operate in two business models, and that's hard because ultimately it means you got to think two different ways. You got to think the old way with existing customers in the existing obligations that you've made, the existing projects and such, but then you've got to think a new way. Sometimes you may literally have the same customer. You're working with them one project the old way and one project the new way. Preferably, you know, one project ends and then you start another one. You don't have overlap. But literally, you're going to have some customers operating under one business model and some under the old business model. And you have to be able to think that way. What gets challenging is sometimes you don't perceive when the old way of thinking is leaking over into the new. And that's where this challenge becomes. But that's why we're so emphatic about saying costs are irrelevant. Because the idea that you can allocate a certain amount of a person's salary to a certain customer's project, it's fallacy. You just can't do it. You can't divide up a salary. When you hire somebody, you're making a commitment to pay them that salary. You're not making a commitment to pay them, you know, nickel and dime. You're saying, this is what I'm going to pay you if they're on a salary basis. And most professional firms, what we're talking about here is really, you and I have referred to it sometimes as timesheets in advance, resource allocation or capacity planning. This idea that, you know, we have a team who essentially has the ability to do so much, and we're going to allocate those resources to projects where we've made the commitments. But sometimes we'll allocate more than a project needs, sometimes we'll allocate less. But that's on us. We know it balances out. What we're interested in doing is we're wanting to make sure with the customer, with them, what we're talking about is here's the result we're going to achieve and here's the price you're going to pay. That there's no ambiguity in that. Okay, if there's ambiguity in the situation, we're going to handle that internally. And yeah, we're going to make some mistakes. Sometimes we'll quote a price too high and the customer will say no. Sometimes we'll quote it too low and we'll wind up realizing we should have charged a higher amount for that. But that's just part of learning. One of the things you and I talked about on last week's show is the fact that there's no such thing as a right price. There's just a better price and a worse price. So this idea that we can track our costs and allocate it to any specific project, it's fallacy. It just, how do you know you're profitable? Look at your P&L. And ideally, the way you're going to run the business is you're going to see what your revenue is, and then you're going to go, okay, based on this revenue, we can spend this much to run the business, right? this idea that, you know, we're going to incur the, you know, we're going to, in other words, you basically budget what you're going to spend on things, right? Running on the business. It's a cash flow. It's a cash management type of thing on the back end. It has nothing to do with the pricing on the front.
So I want to break down a couple of things, if you don't mind, because you gave us a lot of meat there. So first, let me start with, you mentioned business model, strategy, and tactic. Okay, so these are sort of three overarching elements that that sort of take over our thinking anytime we think about making a major transformation in our business. So the major transformation that we're proposing, it's switching to value pricing. That's the one thing that we're proposing. You switch to value pricing. Switch to value pricing means we no longer track time in the context of invoicing. Okay, we may want to track time for XYZ reason. Hopefully it's not with the purposes of inferring cost, and it's not with the purposes of charging, right? So if you want to track time for some other reason, right, because you have to run your payroll, fine. But just tracking time, it's costly, right? From the perspective of anxiety and the most valuable team members' time, especially the upper management. They're going to sit there and try to dissect timesheets to see if the employees worked the right amount of hours in the right job. That in itself, it's time consuming and counterproductive. So the first ask that we have is make the switch to value pricing, which means do not track your costs for your employees, or do not track your time costs. And I'm going to get back to that in a second, because we have to talk about the mechanics of that, because accountants say, well, you know, how am I supposed to be profitable? And you said, just look at your P&L, but I want to get deeper into that. But going back to these three overarching elements, the strategy, what was it? The business model, the strategy, and the tactic. So if you charge by the hour, right, your business model is acquire a client that agrees to pay your bill that's measured in time. That's the business model of getting charging by the hour. What is the strategy? Is find clients that are okay with that, right? And just okay with that, right? Because there's no, you're not there to satisfy anyone. You're just there to collect the number of hours that you worked, right? You may have some happy customers. That's true. There may be some happy, you may have happy people that are happy with paying that, but they may not be ecstatic, or they may not be sustainable for the long term. We can also deep dive into that. And then the third thing is tactic. So if I have an hourly fee business model, my business model is tracking my time and invoicing my customers. The strategy is finding the customers that are okay with that. And the tactic is charge for more hours, right? There's everything about that is wrong, right? Like when your tactic is charge more hours, your tactic is put more stuff in the invoice. That is, it is so counterproductive with what your customer wants in the long run. Now, making the contrast, making the switch to value pricing, the business model is creating value, right? That's the business model. We're out there to create value, right? And hopefully, if we understand the value we create, we can extract a portion of that from our customers. And Kirk has alluded to that the value needs to be a multiple of what you charge. And that's usually a really good way to sell it. Say, look, I'm charging you 100 because you're getting 200 from me. That's usually a very simple way to explain value, right? And the mechanics of how you explain value, I mean, we have some value pricing conversation episodes, and Kirk, we're going to deep dive deeper into that. And your course will be all about that, right? What are the mechanics of that switch? What are the mechanics of the conversation? And the third one is the tactic. Now, what happens in a value pricing business model where our business model is to create value, our strategy is to discover the value, right? That's what the strategy is, right? So the business model is to create it, and the strategy is to discover it, like figure out how to find it, right? And we've talked about Mahan Khalsa's book on Let's Get Real or Let's Not Play, which is a great systematic way of discovering that value. But what is the tactic, right? So when we have a value pricing business model, what is the tactic? Okay, so Kirk, the third one, I guess that's the hardest one. But I think that the tactic is going to be expertise. The tactic is going to be prove your expertise, right? So I'm here to create value as an overarching business model. My strategy is to find the value or find the untapped, like all this undiscovered value that's potentially we can deliver. And the tactic is create expertise or create authority with your content and with your knowledge. So people say, you are the person that's going to unlock that magic door where I'm going to find this, you know, this bunch of value that was tucked away. And our strategy is to give it to the customer so we can take a piece of it. So we have to contrast the two types of businesses that there is. And you have to choose what you want. You want the business in which the tactic is to charge, to work more, to charge more, or you want the business where the tactic is to be well known and respected for your expertise and for customers to find you and want to hire you for what you deliver to them. So you have to contrast the two, and you have to say, where would I prefer to be? Because on the second option, on the value pricing option, you get to do more fun things, right? You get to be okay with spending time or spending costs on value creation. Like, I'm okay with spending a couple $1,000s in a digital camera that has nothing to do with accounting because I know I'm going to use it to create value. I'm okay with spending $5,000 to go to a conference to learn how to be a YouTuber because I know I'm going to use it to create value, and creating value is part of my business model and my strategy. So when your business model and your strategy is value creation, you're allowed to be more creative with your cost structure, but you have to have the confidence that when the customers come in, when it comes the time to switch your customers or bring new customers, you're going to charge for the value that you're creating. For most folks that are stuck in this hourly model, for them to go to a conference in their mind, that's, you know, 36 hours or whatever it is. I say 3 days worth, right? That's, you know, 24 hours of billable time. That's my opportunity cost. For me to send an employee, that's 24 hours or whatever it is, 48 hours worth of billable time. That's my opportunity cost. For me to spend 2 hours to write an article to post into a blog, that's 2 hours of billable time opportunity cost that I'm missing. So this mindset shift of tracking every minutia of cost, it's a symptom of the sickness that is hourly based billing business model. Because in an hourly based business model, usually you're working in thin margins, right? When you price something, not even price, but when you set the rate, you say, well, my employees cost me $25 an hour and my overhead allocated per employee is roughly $20 an hour. So therefore, by default, my cost per hour is $45 an hour. So as long as I charge 60, 70, 80, I got margin, right? That's the mindset of the hourly based business model. But when you work in those tight margins, what happens when you want to send your employee away for 2-3 hours so they can hone down on their Excel skills and work faster? Or we're going to send them to a QuickBooks seminar so they can import the data from QuickBooks faster. Or you want to send them to a sales tax update class that lets them know about all the new sales tax regulations for the state and can proactively prevent the client from getting into trouble and saving the client a lot of money in taxes, which they're willing to pay big bucks for, tax planning and tax saving. So the stark contrast of the two business models is, with one, you have the creative freedom to develop yourself and your staff. And because you're creating value, and value creation, it's about the most abstract thing in the world, which means that the only way to create value is to do abstract type of activities, right? Like podcasting, like creating videos, like meeting someone to discuss potential opportunities to collaborate with content. You know, that type of stuff is abstract and it doesn't fit anywhere in the hourly business model. But when you have the creative freedom and license to do that, the real amazing things happen. And now you have more opportunity for disruption and for changing things and for being dynamic enough to be able to also deal with other folks that are trying to disrupt your industry. So that was my version of your response of what you were saying. And I wanted to kind of bring it into tangible terms for the folks that are just kind of stuck with, well, you know, the mathematics don't work, Hector. Well, I'm telling you, the mathematics work. Okay. Like, don't argue with me about this. I have a value pricing business, right? And I'm the most talented person, technically speaking, I'm the most talented person in my firm. That means that I have the capacity to charge the highest hourly rate for my technical skills, and I'm the least available because I'm spending time creating value in ways that adds value to the entire organization through videos, through whatever, right? And that's the reason why I adopted the value pricing model. It wasn't because Ron Baker said you're going to make more money. By the way, that's a great feature. But it was because I now have the creative license to do anything that fits my strategy, which is value creation. And that's the difference between cost tracking and value creation. And I'll end it with one quote that I heard somewhere, and I don't know who said it, and I Googled it and I can't find it, so I'm going to officially take credit for it, which is, you need to strive to be effective even at the risk of being inefficient. Now, that only works if you know what being effective means. And in order to know what being effective means, you have to know what your customers value. And that's it. It's that simple. If you know what your customers value and you're effective at giving that value, trust me, the dollars come. The business comes. The money comes. Because there's so many crappy providers out there of any services that don't create value. They just invoice people. That when people start getting fed up and they find the one provider where the number one goal and strategy is to create value, they want to latch to that. And anytime they have extra money, they just throw it at them because I don't want that person to leave. And that happens to me all the time. Customers just want to throw money at me because they don't want me to go anywhere because my one goal in life is to create value for them. And that has nothing to do with cost tracking. And value is unmeasurable. So you can't take cost tracking and value and compare the two things. I think that they're actually at odds with each other. So that's, you also got me riled up.
Well, good. It's about time. Yeah. Well, he took 36 episodes. No, I'm joking. But, you know, the other thing I think we need to do is, you know, we keep talking about what time is not. Okay. We keep saying time is not a cost. Time is not a cost. Well, we need to talk about what time is. What time really is a constraint. Meaning, time is a delivery window. We tell the customer, we want to achieve this result. The customer doesn't care how much effort it takes us to achieve it as long as we deliver it when we said we're going to deliver it. Time is a constraint. You use the example of sending an employee to a conference. It's a constraint because they can only do one activity at a time. They can't be two places at once. Time is a constraint. It is not a cost. You can't spend time. You just decide how you're going to use that. And in doing so, time becomes the constraint. When you invest yourself going to a conference, you're making a choice that time is going to be used in that area. Well, by definition, it's a constraint because you can't use that time to do anything else. That's, you know, no matter can't be in two places at the same time. Time is literally a constraint. It is a resource that you have to allocate and be aware of. But I hate calling it allocate because that sounds like ours again. But it's I'm not saying you don't plan your capacity, right? Once you have a project, you say, okay, we told the customer we're going to deliver this in 90 days. And so we probably need, you know, somebody to work on it, you know, this week and next week and then see where we are. You do have to kind of plan your timesheets in advance to get to where you're going. But the idea that after the time that we're going to, number one, track the time, and then number two, look at it afterwards to make any decisions, you can't make decisions once you have chosen what to do with that time. It's gone. You can't get it back. Looking at how you spent your time in arrears, it's just like reading a history book. You can't make any relevant decisions based on that. You have to make decisions looking out into the future. Now, can you use historical experience to make better judgment? Certainly you can. But you can't make judgment on historical information. You can only make judgment about future possibilities.
And to add on to that, there was a quote by Deepak Chopra, and I'm paraphrasing here because I'm really looking researching exactly what the wording that he used. But and by the way, I'm not a Deepak Chopra fan, but my mom is, so I listen to what she's got to say about Deepak Chopra all the time. But he says that time doesn't exist. Time is it's a concept that human beings invented in order to measure inevitable change. So time is this thing that you can't control, you can't see. Time is just how we measure how the earth turned, right? And how we aged. That's really all time is, right? Time is a measurement of each individual person's age and the measurement of how the earth turns around the sun. That's all time is. In social circles and even in business circles, people tend to respond with thank you for your time, right? Or you know, thank you for giving me your time. Most people are not really, they don't really mean that there was an exchange of time, because people, there's no such thing as an exchange of time. What people are really thanking you for, it's for attention, right? So thank you for your time, because you spent an hour with someone explaining them their books, really means thank you for your undivided attention. That's really what, or thank you for giving me your undivided attention. That's what people are thanking for. And sometimes value creation is a component of undivided attention. That's true. Like, for example, if you're going to go speak in a conference and you have to be there between 9 and 10 to do your session, you're technically selling your presence of that time slot. There is some element of exchange of you, your physical presence, but you're not, that time is not what you're selling. You're selling your presence and your attention to the crowd then. And the challenge is that because it's impossible to scale, right, your presence, because you said you can only be in one place at a time. You can't be in two places at the same time, because it's impossible to scale your attention, which means for the most part, we're doing one thing at the moment. I don't want to say the word time again. We're doing one thing at the moment. What's most valuable is how much value you're creating during that moment in time, or that moment spent. So it's not about being there. It's not about spending the time. Simply it's about where you're able to create value during that time investment. And this is not just for the firm owners. This is for the employees as well, because firm owners or managers tend to only look at their employees' productivity based on how much billable time they spend on a job. And this is both on hourly billing and non-hourly billing firms. I think even value pricing firms are looking at tracking people's time, how much time you spend. I do it, right? I called my employee and said, just 2 days ago, and I said, hey, I was about to invoice a customer. He fixed the price that we had agreed up front. And I went back and asked her, hey, just more or less, how much time you spent on that? And she told me, spent about half a day for 3 days straight, right? So that was what, 12 hours, right? Whatever she costs per hour, whatever the 12 hours are, whatever that formula is, play no role on me pricing that service. However, there's a big however, whether you are all in on value pricing or not, if you know math and you know that the time that they're spending on a job times the rate, it's higher than what you're charging, and this is a systematic problem, then there's either a problem with your entire business model. You know, you were not supposed, the square peg round hole was not, it's still sitting there, right? You still have the round hole, which is the price you gave to someone. The square peg is what your employee is costing you per hour, and the amount of hours, that there's still a problem there, right? But what happens when the first 3 months they spend 12 hours, and then on the third, fourth, fifth month, and this is true for bookkeeping and accounting, you get it. Like, you know the clients, you know what the client needs, you know what the client issues are. You're able to quickly assess, what is it that they were trying to do. You know, all these things were happening simultaneously that allowed that person to go from 12 hours per month on a job to now possibly 2 hours per month on a job, because it clicked. So were you going to judge the profitability of that job because the first couple of months it took more hours times the rate than what you were getting paid? Or are you going to judge overall, looking at it from a faraway view, you know, can I overall turn a profit as long as I become effective over time? And that's really the challenge that most accountants have. They look at that very short-term measure of rate times hours minus how much I'm charging for the job. And if that's not a positive number, people automatically just turn off from value pricing.
Yeah. Well, and it really is a huge mind shift. The thing that I would remind people is that this idea that we can allocate costs by tracking time came out of the industrial age. It came out of the idea that back when there were, you know, Andrew Carnegie and the big steel mills and Henry Ford and the automobile and all these things. It's that area of manufacturing that this idea of cost allocation came from. And there's now a movement in some areas of accounting, both in the professional space and the academic space, that even this idea, you know, cost accounting in manufacturing is flawed. In fact, there's a book out there by Reginald Thomas Lee, who's one of the Verisage fellows, called Lies, Damn Lies, and Cost Accounting, or The Death of Cost Accounting, something like that. But he's basically taking he's got a whole book where he's just taking cost accounting apart. And he's not just doing it on the professional services side, he's doing it across the board. What we're trying to say is that when you stop worrying about what you're inputting into something, which tracking time is doing that, and start focusing on the results, all of a sudden there's a huge shift. It's bigger than a domino effect. It's a paradigm shift in your mind, with the customer, and with your team, with your employees. It doesn't happen all at once, but it happens over time. The idea that what we're interested in is the result. We're interested in the customer achieved this with our help, and as a reward for helping them, we were paid Y. And we can always on the backside look and go, hey, did we have the proper balance of value created for the customer to the price we captured for that? And that's something that you need to be looking at if you're running your business based on a value model. You need to look at that after the fact and go, did we create more value than we thought we would? Did we create less? Could we have captured more in the price, etc.? But those are things you look at, and then based on that, you improve moving forward. So I want to get back to VPS, the value pricing switch. So here's what we're doing. We're going to run this for 4 weeks, starting the second week in November, because the first week is going to be QB Connect, and you and I will both be out there teaching sessions. Now, I should probably add, Hector's actually not teaching part of VPS, but you never know. He might pop in here or there and say hi. But I'm going to teach three sessions. Okay. I'm going to teach one session, I'm going to train for a session, and I'm going to coach for a session. Here's how that's going to work. I'm going to have a certain amount of core content that I want to cover each week. And I'm going to do that during the first session. It's going to be on Monday of each week. I'm going to cover that core content. Then I'm going to come back on Wednesday, and we're going to go through a real life case study that implements that content. I'm going to walk you through it. We're going to see, okay, how was the content applied? How were the decisions made? What was the outcome, etc.? So we're going to essentially take what we've learned in the classroom and try to apply it, see after the fact in a case study how it was applied. And then the third part, so the first part teaching, second part training, third part coaching, that's going to be Q&A, where students are going to be able to bring in the scenarios they're dealing with, ask me questions, but also dialogue with each other. We're also going to have a 24/7 chat room, so that if you're not online during one of those sessions and you still need help, you can get it. The sessions will all be recorded. You'll be able to view those. So in case you're not able to attend one of them. And there's also some bonuses that I'll mention. For the first 10 people that sign up, you're going to get two private coaching sessions with me in addition to whatever is in the 4 weeks. If you're one of the second group of 10, like 11 through 20, you're going to get one private session with me. So there is a pretty big incentive out there to sign up, be one of the first ones, because I'm only offering a limited number for both those bonuses. And that's something, as long as you're, you know, one of the first 10 or the first 20, you're going to qualify for that. Hector, anything else that I didn't address about that, or questions, kind of wrap it up for us?
I'll bring it home, because I know you have to go. So for 4 weeks, there's going to be 2 to 3 sessions a week that you'll be teaching. I assume they're going to be about an hour long. So you have to allocate some of the time for this. Did you mention the price? I wasn't sure if you mentioned the price.
I did not. I guess I should, since we're talking about pricing, I should. It's $500.
Okay. So $500 one-time fee includes this 4 weeks of training. And what you're going to learn is all the mechanics of switching. If you already have a running accounting practice and you're charging by the hour, how do you go through and what you need to do and change in order to, by 2019, right, start a new year with a full value pricing firm? Is that right?
Is that a question or a comment? Sorry.
No, just a comment on a question, right?
That's, okay. All right.
I was just summarizing. And I'm personally not involved. This is Kirk's thing. If I was involved, we would probably charge double so each of us can get compensated. So Kirk will do this on his own. And I may show up in one of the other ones. But if I do, I would probably just be bothering because Kirk actually is the expert at this stuff. So I like to wrap it up with one thing. And I think that I've been trying to say this for a very long time. I've been trying to coin this phrase. So I'm going to use this whole setup to coin this phrase. And it is, everybody hears you have to spend money to make money, right? Everybody has heard that. You got to spend money to make money. The phrase I want to coin is you have to create value to make money. And if that's something that you understand and that's something that clicks with you, it's not you have to spend money to make money. You have to create value to make money. If that clicks with you, then you're ready to make the whole entire business model and mindset shift. So that's it for us. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.